The New England Revolution were able to take the huge 4-2 victory over the Columbus Crew in the first leg of the Eastern Conference semifinals.
Wynn makes it 2-1. He spanked that into the back of the net.
Now it's back to Gillette, where the Revs have been dominant all year long.
Hello, Kellen Rowe!
It's now time to listen to the Pitch Invaders podcast with your hosts, Tom Quinlan and Will Blasini.
Yeah, I had to take my headphones off for that one. I feel like I was having some sort of sexual act transmitted through my eardrums, which I was not ready to deal with at 10:38 in the morning.
Good morning, New England! How you feeling
Vietnam.
Today? Shout out Robin Williams.
I want to make one quick statement.
Brian Speaks is in studio. I know he wasn't in the lineup, but he is here today. Will Blasini, I am Tom Quinlan. We'll have Kyle McCarthy on in a little bit to talk playoff action, maybe some MVP stuff as well. But 4-2 in Columbus. Are you freaking kidding me? Not just one from Charlie Davies, two from Charlie Davies. Two. And it's not even just Lee Wynn doing it anymore. Give it up, people. Book your tickets. Get ready.
Where are they booking their tickets to? We don't know.
Either New York or D.C.
We don't know.
So you just want
New York.
So you want people to book two sets of tickets.
Well, you can always cancel. You have at least a week to get a refund.
I don't know. I heard prices are increasing a bit by $5 for plane tickets. So, you know what? Don't book your tickets right now, people. It could be dangerous for you in the long run. $5 are a lot.
Well, you know what? You can always take a train because you can get to New York and D.C. We're right by the Accela train line.
Oh, God. The thing is, though, to take a train there, they have to hop on the train in this area, which, needless to say, Amtrak is not the most amazing form of transportation ever. It's kind of terrible. You know how much it takes me to get from New Haven to New York? $20. You know how much it takes me to get from New Haven to Boston?
$60.
No.
$80.
No.
$120.
Closer.
$140.
Basically.
Doesn't matter. Start booking tickets for either D.C. or New York. What the hell just happened in Columbus, Ohio? We were talking about the Crew last week. Well, let me preface my statement. This is the team I wanted New England to see all along. And it was because of the reasons the other night you saw. They were not going to be afraid to play him in the midfield. They were able to figure out this team. Finally! And shutting down guys like Ethan Finley, Tony Chani. Now, granted, Columbus had their opportunities, and they scored twice as well. And there is a still mathematically alive chance that they can do something and ruin what was a great Eastern Conference semifinals opening leg for the New England Revolution. Now, here's the other side of that. Do you really think that Columbus is going to put up three goals? Here's another thing. Columbus would have to score four here in New England if the Revs score even once. So, I'm not saying you're dead, but you still got a chance.
Of course you have a chance, but the one thing that really impressed me at this game compareth to the previous games between Columbus and New England is that out of all the games, this was the highest level of possession that Columbus had against New England, which means that despite all the changes that have happened, yes, New England put more goals away, but Columbus were able to maintain, keep the ball out of their hands more often, which could, you know, be dangerous in the end. I'm not necessarily saying that possession always leads to goals, because it doesn't, but possession clearly does, a la Barcelona 2010.
Well,
you know, there is a danger with allowing them way too much space on the ball, and you know what? This could easily be turned around in Gillette. Will it be? I don't think so, but there's always that possibilidad.
Here's my counter with the possession facts, though, because most of the night you saw Columbus playing in their own defensive half. They were trying to clear the ball, and when they got upfield, they would just dump and go. It was like the old hockey term for the sake of the argument. They would just dump and go, send the ball upfield, and hopefully Higuain, Finley, or one of their big men who were shut down and made obsolete could go up and get the ball and get behind Jose and AJ. I really do think they Columbus Crew underestimated the center back pairing of AJ Soares and Jose Gonsalves, and it's something I want to get into later too with Kyle. But defensively, New England looks so. This might be the best defensive game this year from the New England Revolution, and they gave up on the road. This was the at home 5-0 versus Seattle was the best game of the year from the refs.
Brian, can you please talk some sense into this man?
No, listen. If not for a penalty in the 92nd minute by Jose Gonsalves on a handball, where you're ready to kill Jose again, but I really did think defensively. This was the best I've seen this team on the road all year.
When you add the qualifier on the road, I'm not going to argue that. I mean, I'm sure I could go back and look and find a game. But off the top of my head, I can't think of a road game that they
have.
You add that qualifier, yes. This very well could be the best defensive game the Revs have played defensively.
I can't stand on the I can't agree with that. I can't agree with that because I think that there's something to be said about having a 4-1 goal lead, or even, you know, when you're leading away from home, the last thing you want to do is concede. And I think the fact that they conceded spells out that they clearly weren't in the right mentality to defend. And you gotta keep a lead like that. I'm sorry. You have to hold
but
on
look
to
at the,
those.
Look at the way the goals came
those
for
Columbus.
Those
are beautiful cookies that you gotta keep. You can't hand them out.
Yeah, and Columbus
keep them
stole
in the, cookie
the jar. Cookies. Columbus stole the cookies from the cookie jar when mom wasn't looking. And you had a rebound goal that came off of now the name's escaping me.
We got popcorn in the studio.
We got what's his name scored the first goal for Columbus.
Justin Merrim
scores the first goal for Columbus off a rebound. Now here's the counter of it. Here's why I say New England defensively look better. Thank you for bringing up Merrim, because that was not coming to my mind at the time. Merrim had a shot right in front of the net. It was around the 29th minute. This is right before the Revs put in their first goal of the game. Merrim has a shot on the far side of the field. Bobby comes off his line, and Bobby and the defense were able to just do enough to distract Justin Merrim enough to have him sail that one off the crossbar. And on the other end, Charlie Davies is able to get the goal off the free kick, which was beautifully served in by Kellen Rowe. We'll talk about the free kicks and the dead ball situations for New England as well, because, you know, this might be the best. Take away the best defensive game of the year on the road. This might be the best road game of the year from the New England Revolution.
It was certainly good. It was certainly entertaining. And also, to the previous point about Columbus's possession, 344 of their 420 passes were in New England's half. They were in New England's half. They had 106 in basically the 18-yard box, and they had 238 in their half, just outside
but it
the 18-yard box.
Anything really challenging, though.
But clearly it was, though. Clearly they had
who
enough
sat back,
possession.
Mac, who sat back more, though, Columbus or New England?
New England.
The possession numbers might
you're gonna
tell you
sit,
that.
You're going to sit back more if you're getting out-possessed.
But when it mattered most, who sat back more? Who absorbed more pressure in the heat of certain counters? Columbus did.
Yeah, they sat back when they were absorbing counters. But in general, New England, sat back and kind of absorbed a lot of pressure. And the only difference really that I saw in this game was the efficiency of converting your chances. That's about it. Because the difference between what happened on the field and what happened on the scoreline is that New England for sure converted their chances a whole lot more efficiently than Columbus were. Let's not forget.
Which is why Mirren's miss is so
great,
important.
Yeah, it was very important. And Columbus had a lot
still
of
tied
really
at zero
good
at
chances.
That point.
They had a lot of really good chances to put a ball in the back of the net. And you know what? Sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Brian, what is your overall assessment on the way things went for New England and Columbus? Were you overall more impressed with New England, Columbus? I know, you know, it was tough for you to watch the game out in Chicago, but in seeing through highlights and stuff, you know, did Columbus seem like they had that same overall, the overbearing presence that they did in the first three games? Because felt like it might have been a little bit of a different... So you're saying, oh yeah, Will.
Welcome back. No, I was going to say, oh yeah, welcome back, Brian. I feel like we should welcome him back by giving him, you know, much adulation.
Even
and
though
love.
He didn't miss any
he
time.
He is ambassador.
He was on the Thursday show, and he is our beard ambassador.
3 days.
So, again, your overall thoughts on maybe the.
New England
way
suffered for those 3 days. Okay? We had rain, we had sleet, my heat broke in that time,
true,
and I think there's a direct correlation between you leaving and the heat in my house breaking. So, your presence will now hopefully fix that.
It is possible. So, you know, obviously, like I said, I really only saw, like Tom said, I really only saw the highlights of the game, unfortunately, looking at stats. I mean, it kind of seems, honestly, from the outside looking in, that it was the same old, and the Revs were just able to capitalize better. I mean, I'm looking here and, you know, the passing accuracy is better from Columbus. The possession is better. They tackled better. They had more saves. You know, their shots are kind of basically on the same. They have more corners, more crosses. But the Revs were just able to capitalize. I mean, that the dead ball situation. I know you said we were going to talk about that.
Let's talk about it. Yeah.
But I mean, that was the determining factor. I mean, if the Revs don't score on, you know, that the free kick off to Charlie's head and the free kick off Tierney's foot, you're looking at a tie game. You know, so you're looking at a situation now that the Revs have done something that they haven't been able to do all season, which is be deadly on the free kick. And I said this, I think it was like a year and a half ago. I was like, imagine if the Revs weren't awful in the dead ball situation, how much better of a team they would be. And that's coming to fruition
and
now.
Here's your example.
I mean, you look at last season. They did next to nothing when it came to corner kicks and free kicks.
Weren't they the second worst team in MLS scoring, even worse?
Every time Lee Wynn got the ball in the middle of the field, people just fouled him because it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Basically, a foul was a turnover for the Revs because they couldn't do anything last year. This year, it's a different story, and that's why I think that this is what they were able to beat Columbus with the dead ball, and that was a big thing that they haven't been able to do in the other two matchups or three matchups.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about in this game was the breakdown of our two goalkeepers, Bobby Shuttlesworth versus Steve Clark. You know, I'm not the greatest supporter of Bobby Shuttlesworth.
Which is disappointing.
Which is disappointing, I know. I'm sorry, Bobby.
Woo!
But the thing is that we all know that Steve Clark is a better goalkeeper. He has been throughout this year. And I think that there's something to be said about Bobby actually coming.
Yeah, but why is Steve Clark making those mindless mistakes?
That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that it is out of character for Steve Clark in these situations to not play to the level that we expect. And that's why I'm trying to say in a roundabout way, I got to give credit to Bobby Shuttlesworth. Because when push came to shove in that game, he did step up and he did have a lot of great moments.
Yeah, and you know, you say the save numbers are different between New England and Columbus. Well, that's strictly because the defense didn't allow Bobby to be tested as much. I mean, I can only count on a handful of times that Columbus was able to break through. And the only time that they were able to break through was when they got through behind Jose. I rarely saw them test Andrew and AJ the same way they tested Jose and Chris. But even then, I did not see Bobby get tested in those situations.
For shots on target, New England had nine, while Columbus had six. So, I mean, there were six shots on target.
Six shots on target, but, I mean, it's nothing. I didn't think it was anything that Bobby couldn't handle the other night. I thought, listen, I wouldn't say it's the best performance out of Bobby, but the defensive makeup, the way the guys were playing. Jermaine, too. Scott, too. I'm going to throw them into the mix. They did a good job in weathering the midfield. I think Scott is a tremendous player. And for you people that are not paying attention to guys like Scott Caldwell, you're clearly missing out. You know, I read an Ankrin 11 last week that didn't even, like, because you could field an MLS team of all Akron players. Scott Caldwell doesn't even make that list. Well, Trapp does. Scott Caldwell doesn't. Scott Caldwell proved the other night why he belongs on an Akron 11. Starting. Because, I mean, he's one of the best pure technical center defensive midfielders, you know, over the last 8 weeks, really. I mean, he's had to do a lot this year. Including because Andy Dorman went out as well. We haven't seen Andy Dorman since June, or I think.
He played the season, the last game of the season.
Yeah, you're right. But we haven't seen him in a big. Okay.
Thank God we haven't.
Re-preface my statement. We haven't seen Andy Dorman play in a big game since June. We haven't seen Andy Dorman play an important role for this team since late May. Scott Caldwell stepped into that role, and he did a huge job in helping the Revs secure the win the other night. And then in two, you saw Lee Wynn. I thought he played defense a little bit more. But, you know, he was right there at the top of that midfield, able to generate a counter. I thought it was a good win, you know, final thought on it. But I'm starting to look forward to the Eastern Conference Finals and to see if the Revs play the D.C. or New York.
Final comment on the whole Shuttlesworth-Steve Clark, because I really do think that this is where the game was won or lost for both
really?
Teams. I really do, because if you look at the confidence that Bobby Shuttlesworth had coming out off his line to help back up the Revs, I think that was more productive than what Steve Clark was able to do. Steve Clark really didn't come off his line enough to help out his defense. He kind of sat back. And to be honest, it seemed to me that there was a little bit of a fear factor that Steve Clark had in his head of the Revs attackers coming at him. I don't think he was confident enough to get out there and assert his authority, whereas I feel like Bobby Shuttlesworth had enough confidence to come out there, assert what he was trying to do. And the reason why I say that is because if you look at some of what he did last night, not necessarily just the saves, but coming off his line to defend and clear balls, to punch things away, those were higher up. They were a lot higher up out of his six-yard box even. So I think that that is a good demonstration of a confident keeper who knows when he's needed, whereas Steve Clark, uncharacteristically, did not do that.
Bobby, 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 Bobby! Woo!
I hate that drop so bad. It's so, so annoying.
Love it, love it. All right, let's move on to Will's part of the woods, because we were talking about him earlier. New York! New York, I want to wake up in that city that doesn't sleep, because they've played three games in 8 days. 8 games in 3 days would be astronomically impossible, but 3 games in 8 days.
I almost feel like you could pencil in everything that I'm about to say right now. So I'll let you guys talk about this game if you want, and I will just, you know, be the peanut gallery over here. But go ahead, take it away, because I already know what y'all already know what I think about
Bradley
this.
Wright Phillips. I mean, Bradley Wright Phillips has proven to be, again, the clinical finisher, and maybe an MVP this year. Maybe an unappreciated MVP for...
No, not unappreciated. You're using the wrong word. The word is underperforming most clinical finisher in the MLS. That's what you mean to say. Underperforming.
Underperforming?
Underperforming.
Why underperforming?
Because, as Henri has said multiple times, and it's true, Bradley Wright Phillips easily could have 40 goals this year. Because he puts himself, compared to any other offensive player in this league, he puts himself in the best opportunities to score, and he does not convert as many as he should. There were three instances that I could think of the top of my head in that DC game where he could have gotten another goal. There was a header by himself early on. There was another moment in which he was to the right of the 18-yard box. That was a bit later on in the game.
Bill Hamid had some great saves, too.
But neither of those shots were even on frame. They were within the 18-yard box, pretty much on the 6-yard box, and they did not even come close to the goal. So that's why I say that he is the most underperforming. He is the underperforming most clinical finisher in the MLS, because I think that he could have a lot more goals. And I think that if he were to finally start putting those chances away, we're looking at a Red Bulls team that you don't really understand how to slow them down.
I think that's fair enough. I mean, even just the last game of the season when Wright Phillips tied 27 goals, the record with Wondolowski, he should have had easily two or three more goals just that game.
Yep.
I mean, you're almost looking at someone who not only could have Wright Phillips have tied it like he did, he should have beaten it. He probably could have beaten whatever record there is for hat tricks in a season. I mean, just based on that, like,
yeah.
I don't disagree with Henri at all when he says that Wright Phillips could have scored 40.
Yeah, I mean, really think he could have.
Because I can think of at least seven or eight.
Just, the past two games.
Yeah. And I don't watch every minute of every Red Bull game, but when I do, I see Wright Phillips as someone who misses as much as he gets. And
yeah.
It's ridiculous when you think of how many goals he was able to net.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And also, it's honestly just an incredible testament, though, to the guys that he has around him, because it seems to me that they are an incredible, you know, the Red Bulls are an incredible team at setting this guy up for success. And the crazy part is that when if he can do more, the Red Bulls can do more. They can beat teams by even more goals if he were able to convert, because they're so good at putting him in those opportunities to score. I don't know.
And then on the other side of things, DC's obviously got to, you know, drive you mad. DC's very unimpressive this weekend. I said it last week. They're not the strongest team in the Eastern Conference, and you both looked at me crazy.
Because you are crazy. I mean, the thing is that game was unbelievably uncharacteristic, not just of DC, but of the players that they have on that team. I never would have expected any of them to look so out of place in an MLS playoffs game, considering who they have and the amount of experience that those guys have.
Well, that was not the team that we saw go crazy on most of the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, no, it was not, and that's why I'm surprised, and I think it was a very odd game for DC, because you look at that lineup, you have guys that have been playing in these situations for years and years, and it boggles my mind as to why they weren't able to.
You think Ben Olsen couldn't handle the pressure? I mean, Mike Petke finally gives the New York faithful to be something to be proud about in that arena for a playoff victory. I mean, New York came ready to play. I was waiting. I'm watching that game, and I was waiting for DC to do something off of one of Hamid's saves. You're right. It wasn't Bradley Wright Phillips that had the opportunity that had his shot saved by Hamid. It was I think it was like either Lloyd Sam or Peggy Leonduya. Hamid was right there. It was right on the six. You know, the Red Bulls could have went up 3-4-0 in that game. And Hamid makes a save, and I'm thinking, okay, DC's going to be able to generate something off of this and catch New York sleeping. But no. I mean, the final 15 minutes of the game was played in New York's half. It was absolutely atrocious from DC.
Yeah. It's very disappointing, because I expected this team to do a lot better. And honestly, in the past, DC have always been the team that sends the Metro Stars out of the playoffs. Always. They've done it multiple times. And you know what? Like I said before, I can't overlook the fact that it's surprising a team like Davey Arnault, Bobby Boswell, Sean Franklin, Chris Rolfe, Fabian Espíndola, Nick De Leon. These guys have been in... Eddie Johnson, Chris Korb, Jeff Park, like the Chris Pontius. I can't keep going here.
You're disappointed, guys, if you're a DC fan on Monday morning.
I'm
sure,
honestly disappointed, and I hate DC. I'm disappointed with their performance, because I was expecting more from a seasoned team like this.
And you know that place is going to be absolutely empty, Brian, on Saturday.
I mean, yeah, Brian, what do you am I crazy to think that like this is unbelievably uncharacteristic of these players? Setting aside Ben Olsen and his influence on the team and their performances, do you think that these players should have done more?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, this weekend will be a different story. I think you add Luis Silva back to the mix, and DC United is a hell of a lot different. I mean, Eddie Johnson, I'm actually still a fan of Eddie Johnson.
Why would you do that to yourself?
He is a knucklehead, but I on the field, he's still a good player. But Luis Silva is just in a different class. And I think that adding him back to the mix and to that lineup, I think it adds a lot of maturity and a whole nether feel for the team. And I think it's going to be a lot different. I don't think New York's going to get lucky twice. Because I think that's what it is. I think New York got lucky in the sense that DC didn't show up. Because, like Will said, they do have a history of knocking the Red Bulls
out. So they're going to put up three, you think? You think they're going to put up three and hold New York to a
scoreless?
You know,
it's very possible. Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it happened. If DC ended up winning and going on to the next round of the playoffs, I would not be surprised, because it's happened so many times. They just know exactly how to crush us.
Yeah, and I mean,
and myself.
I didn't say they're going to win. I just said it was going to be a different
game. I was just asking if you thought that would happen.
It's possible. It really is. I mean, DC has proven all season that they are legit. I mean, they've kind of faded off towards the end of the season, but I think that they have it within them to put maybe a 4-1 victory or a 3-0 victory.
All right.
Even a 2-0 victory, and then you go to extra time.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you really need. I mean, you got to get at least two, and then
I'll tell you right now, if it does go to extra time, Red Bull's bench is real suspect because they have Sire Sen.
Yeah.
That's someone they're relying on. Sire Sen. Take that in, everyone. They rely on him in crutch.
Yeah, and you know how atrocious he's been. I mean, we talk about bad players that have come through the New England system. Does it get any worse than Sire Sen? I'm sorry. He was absolutely awful this year. I mean, there was nothing more disappointing than watching that evolution of Sire Sen, possibly at one time, could have been the solution to New England's scoring woes in the middle of the summer. And thank God, there was a team out there willing to take him.
I mean, just if you look at Sire Sen, too, I mean, this is someone who came from the Bayern Munich system.
Yeah.
And he is just completely fallen flat on his face.
Flame. If you're from the Bayern Munich system and you're as young as Sire Sen, you shouldn't be over here in America.
Well, I mean,
that goes into a different conversation.
Something to say.
Let's avoid that one.
Yeah, we've already had that conversation way too many times. But there's clearly something to be said. If he flamed out of the Bayern Munich system, you know, maybe the hype was fake. Always. Yeah.
No.
Always. It was just built on a house of cards. And you know what? Those cards are going to come tumbling down when he subs onto the field, misses his marks, and then all of a sudden DC through
DC New England
means,
next week
get the victory, and DC end up playing New England.
Or 2 weeks.
I will laugh myself for 8 hours as I go down to DC.
And I will cry myself for 18 days.
I hate this because I...
8 days, I will burn a menorah and use the candle wax is going to be my tears.
Jesus. Now, let's move on to the Western Conference stuff and look at Seattle before we talk to Kyle McCarthy.
It's the best.
Kyle was out actually down in Dallas last week to see FC Dallas play in person against Vancouver. So it should be interesting to get his thoughts on what he thought was what he saw in person. But what I saw from Dallas the other night was a hell of a lot better than what they came out with against Vancouver. And what they came out with Vancouver wasn't that bad, but they were very well prepared, I thought, for Seattle, and it was very disappointing that, I mean, and granted, Ozzie Alonso is a world-class player, but if you're a Dallas fan, you're gutted by the fact that you're going back to Seattle drawn at this point.
Yeah, and congratulations to Ozzie Alonso. His wife also gave birth that same
night. Well done.
So, double victory,
I
guess.
Was there a correlation between the goal and the birth? I think...
Written in the stars. Go anyways.
Maybe
that kid
is now destined to be a goal scorer. Calling it right now.
Yeah, I mean,
20 years.
So I
next Abby Wambach.
I was able to catch this game, and Dallas is impressive. I said this last week after they beat Vancouver. I kind of slept on them, not thinking they were as good as they are, but I think they really are one of the better teams in the Western Conference and deservedly in the playoffs. I mean, it was a good game. They did get lucky. I mean, that Marco Papa PK or the foul that led to the PK, that was just a stupid boneheaded play from a really great player.
Yeah.
You know, so honestly, even though Dallas played well, they got real lucky to get that goal in.
Yeah, they did. One of the things that you mentioned Marco Papa, first of all. In my mind, I can't think of anyone else on that Seattle team who can be referred to as Mr. Clutch. That guy, in my mind, consistently steps up at the perfect moments. You might not see him for 89 minutes of a game, but there's 1 minute in which he just says, okay, I'm going to do something. Yeah. That's obviously in an Argentine accent, which I can't replicate right now because I don't have it in my piggy bank. But he shows up when you need him in big ways, and I love it. And I honestly think that this Marco Papa is going to be huge for them going forward. He's going to be huge. And going back to the overall picture of this game, I think the thing that impressed me the most about Dallas is that throughout this whole season, we saw Clint Dempsey, Obafemi Martins, Lamar Nagel, these guys run rings around defenses. We saw the LA and Seattle matchup.
Yeah.
LA is the one of the best is the bet was the best defensive team coming into those two matchups, and Obafemi Martins in both games made them look foolish. Clint Dempsey did the same thing. He made them look foolish. In this game though, I saw Zach Lloyd and Matt Hedges do something that has almost never been done this whole season, which is make them feel uncomfortable even going forward. They did not look like themselves, Obafemi Martins and Clint Dempsey. And so I think that that's a laudatory performance by both those guys. Same thing on the other side of the ball. Chad Marshall, phenomenal game. He almost, no, I wouldn't say by himself, but individually, his ability to keep track of the many moving gears and pieces of Oscar Pereja's attack and Fabian Castillo, list goes on with all the other attackers that they have. He did a great job with picking them all up and shutting them down. And I honestly think that this game, yes, it finished 1-1, but I have to give a round of applause to both defenses because that was an incredible game from both of them.
Yeah, and just building one more guy I want to throw in there, Stephon Fry.
Yeah.
He had some big saves, a couple of big moments. And, I mean, it's just, you would imagine now being the Supporters Shield winner and the performance that you gave 60,000 or whatever it was a couple of weeks ago when you hosted LA to win the Shield. You don't want to fall flat on your face now like you did last year against the Portland Timbers in the second leg of the Western Conference semifinals. And that'll bring us to our next Western Conference semifinal matchup, and that was LA and Real Salt Lake, which was pretty boring, to be honest. I mean, it was, and let me preface my statement. It was boring from the fact that you're nil-nil, and if you're not a soccer fan and you don't understand the intricacies of the sport, and it's not just dump, go, shoot the ball, and get as many goals as possible, like many FIFA believers. And I'm FIFA 15, not the Federation Internacional, whatever it is. It was a game that was hard-nosed. It was a Western Conference game, and it was a beautiful sellout in the Rio Tinto Stadium, and I'm very happy to see that the Utah sports scene is actually captivated by Real Salt Lake a little bit here. I just wish that Salt Lake, who had great opportunities, you remember they had an abundant amount of corners. Will, can you look at the corners amount for me for a second? They were so close so many times in that match, I thought, to giving a goal to the good. And it was impossible for them to get anything by Jaime Pinedo, who also had a very good night as well. Take nothing away from Pinedo.
I think he had a phenomenal night. He almost single-handedly shut down six or five that I can think of off the top of my head, maybe even seven direct attacks that easily could have been a goal-scoring opportunity. He shut that down almost by himself. I think along the exact same veins as the Dallas-Seattle game, this was a game in which the defenders really did shine and which the keepers also had phenomenal performances. You know, yes, it wasn't the most entertaining game, and you're right. A lot of people are going to look at this game and be like, oh, wow, what a dull soccer thing to happen, a 0-0 game, also typical MLS. But the bottom line is that these two teams showed that they have the ability to shut down incredibly productive offensive teams, and that is important, especially going all the way to a final.
Or let me throw this train of thought at you for a second.
Throw a train at me.
The weather in that game prevented either team from getting a good foothold into it. LA was more willing to sit back because they'd be playing a much more comfortable environment back at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. Do you think that once it started becoming more of a reality that this game was probably going to end scoreless, that with about 10 minutes to go, Bruce Arena just started sitting back a little bit more and said, hey, guys, we're going home. We're going back to 80-degree weather.
We're going back
to Cali.
Going back to Cali. And I don't. I don't think Bruce Arena is a stupid person, and I think that would be the mentality of a stupid person.
Well, that's the way. But think about the way that, like, you know, they're treating the away goals and the goals in this MLS playoffs. It's overemphasized.
It's really not, though. I mean, if you look at it this way, right? So Bruce Arena is a really, really smart coach. For him to have that mentality, it's just flawed. If RSL scores one goal, you're now two goals behind if you're LA. You need to score away. And I think that both DC and LA, they're going to end up regretting the fact that they failed to get the away goal. The away goal is so significant.
Whereas Seattle are licking their chops, being like, wow, we got that goal. Now
and New
Dallas,
England. Think about New England.
I mean, New England, that was won by the third goal. But, I mean, something as simple as one goal is, I think, what we're talking about. Even one goal
one
could
away
make
goal.
All the difference. And I actually, and I'm surprised, and I agree with Brian's sentiment that it kind of was a stupid move. Bruce Arena really did sit back for 90 minutes. His team had double the amount of clearances, double the amount of fouls. They had almost triple the amount of tackles. It's like they really just decided, okay, we're going to sit back here. And that the testament to that is the fact that they only got three shots off on goal.
I think
only three.
What's important is RSL and LA are a really great matchup. I mean, by far the most even teams in the playoffs. The only other teams that are as close would be New England and Columbus, and you know that turned out to be a blowout for New England. But these two teams are matched up really, really well. And I don't think that was Bruce Arena's intention to sit back. I mean, it can't be. He understands the away goals. I know, Tom, you said it's overemphasized. I don't agree with that at all. I think it is so significant. And at least one of these teams is going to get burned because of the away goals.
Well, and also, if you look at the history between these two teams in particular and what they've done in the MLS playoffs, let's not forget last year, RSL beat LA to then go to the finals. In 2009, RSL beat LA to go on to win the MLS Cup. In 2011, LA beat RSL to go on to win the MLS Cup. So they have a really good history in the MLS playoffs, and their games are always very entertaining. What I think a 0-0 draw here in Rio Tinto means is that the game in the StubHub Center is going to be phenomenal.
We'll talk more with Kyle McCarthy next about MLS playoffs. Go nowhere. It's time for our little advertiser's break. Back with more after this.
Buying or renting? Then deal with the most trusted realty group in Quincy. I'm talking about none other than Marina Bay Realty Group, located at 333 Victory Road in the heart of Marina Bay. Marina Bay's fantastic realtors will help you find your next residence without the stress, whether you're looking for a high-rise apartment or a home for your new family. Marina Bay Realty Group has you covered. Call David Bouya today at 617-471-3070. Again, that's 617-471-3070.
Want something different for dinner tonight? Then check out Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. With four locations across the metro Boston area, Papagayo's is the perfect restaurant for a party of two or 20. So come and have a burrito or a signature taco, and don't miss the New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WUFC. View the menu now at papagayoboston.com. That's P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O Boston.com.
Sofia's Pizzeria, the official pizza of New England Soccer Weekly, the New England Revolution post-match report, and 1510 WUFC. Buy two large cheese pizzas for just $13.95 today. For more specials, visit Sofia's Pizzeria online at sofiaspizzahouse.com or give them a call at 617-471-0004. And be sure to check out New England Soccer Weekly and the New England Revolution post-match report, all on 1510 WUFC, where liberty has a voice.
You're listening to the Pitch Invaders podcast. And now, your hosts, Tom Quinlan and Will Blasini, joined on the Allied Healthcare Insurance Hotline with Kyle McCarthy of Fox Soccer.
And yes, we are back on the Pitch Invaders podcast. Brian speaks in studio as well. Again, another apologies to this man because we didn't know he was coming in originally this morning.
Yeah, I just didn't think I was as hardcore as I was. Like, I literally was home for like 6 hours and slept for five of those, and I'm here today.
I knew it was coming. I felt the beard presence of Quincy Bay just increase, or it's Marina Bay.
Yes,
the beard presence increased a lot.
Yeah, there's not enough beard here, so I needed to show up.
I know. I can't really grow much on my face.
We got to get Nat Borchers to come in for sure.
We do. Oh my God.
And
what a beard.
Speaking of, our next guest definitely doesn't have a beard, but he knows what Nat Borchers looks like, and He's seen some great beards in his time, for sure. We're talking about none other than what The Voice said. Welcome us back into the segment. Kyle McCarthy, Fox Sports. Kyle, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. So if you guys ask me to grow a beard, it's going to be a very, very long time.
It's worth it, though, in the long run. Trust me.
I would love to see that finished product, by the way. I think it would be exquisite. Bernini-esque.
It would take a while, and it would be very patchy. So, but let's not and say we did.
Fair enough. Let's talk MLS playoffs and say we did, though. And we'll start with actually the Western Conference, because we were talking about that a little bit before we were going to break. And it is amazing how close everything is right now, Kyle. You were able to see Dallas last week when they took on Vancouver in the knockout round game. And for a team that played three games in 8 days, it's fairly impressive to see the intensity that they were able to come out with to get the 1-1 draw. Salt Lake in L.A. was very disappointing, finishing 0-0. I have some thoughts on that as well that I want to get your thoughts on. But to open with L.A., Seattle and Dallas, excuse me, your thoughts on a 1-1 draw and what could have been a huge opening weekend for FC Dallas?
It's a good result for Seattle. They've got the away goal in Frisco, and they head back to CenturyLink Field on level terms. And if you look at the balance of that tie, I think if FC Dallas was going to plan on going through, I think they needed something tangible to take from that first leg. But they didn't have Mauro Diaz, and they didn't have the creativity they needed to break down Seattle, and then you end up with that sort of result.
We were talking about Chad Marshall before and the job that he had to do locking down the attackers for FC Dallas. It was amazing to see the difference in the outside backs' work that night. Chad Marshall did a lot. So what were your thoughts on how he controlled Dallas?
He's been fantastic this year across the board, and he was good again on Sunday. He's just a reliable, steady presence. Seattle's had its defensive problems this year, but Chad Marshall isn't really a part of them. He's been the rock for them, and I thought he had another good display on Sunday night.
DeAndre Yedlin didn't see much, and I wouldn't say didn't see much action, but he wasn't as tested as much as Marshall was. Why do you think that was, and is the respect level for Yedlin going up?
I think so, and I think he's improving as a defender. I thought he made some really intelligent decisions. I thought he was good in terms of what he needed to do on the ball. I thought he had a pretty nice game. And obviously, FC Dallas was taking a pretty good run at Leo Gonzalez for a lot of that game. So it's an interesting dynamic when you look at how FC Dallas likes to attack, particularly without Mauro Diaz. They're basically going to look at you on the flanks, and they're going to try and isolate people one-on-one. And I thought Seattle handled that threat pretty well by providing lots of support toward the ball.
Let's move on to the other side and look at FC Dallas. And you saw, I mean, Matt Hedges did a great job the other night defensively. How does this Dallas team match up with Seattle heading back to CenturyLink Field? Are they ready for the challenge that's ahead?
They're a plucky bunch. I wouldn't count them completely out. They've got a good side. Oscar Pereja has instilled them with confidence, and they're capable of going in there and upsetting the apple cart a little bit. That being said, it's going to be a little bit tricky. They're not the sort of team that's going to go in there and blow the doors off. They're going to have to grind it out. They're going to have to be very careful with what they do, and they're going to have to make sure they maintain their composure, which they've struggled to do a little bit at points this year.
Is this going back to Seattle now? Is this second leg similar to what it was last year in the Western Conference semis when Seattle was coming home to host Portland?
Well, yes and no. I think this is a different Seattle team. I think if you look at how that game unfolded on Sunday night, there's a lot of encouraging points to take. They were able to come back from conceding what was truly an awful penalty. Michael Pava had no business diving in on Andres Escobar there. They were able to keep their composure. They were able to issue that response and get out of there with a result. So from a Sounders FC perspective, you have to hope that things are different and that the constitution of the side will allow for a different result this time.
So a pretty exciting night in Dallas. Now you move over to L.A., which was a fairly decent game between Salt Lake and L.A. It was a fantastic atmosphere, sellout crowd at the Rio Tinto Stadia. But why wasn't it that these two teams didn't feel like they didn't want to score? I mean, obviously that's a little over-exaggerated right there, but it just didn't feel like the game had a certain intensity and tenacity that you expect from these two clubs, especially considering the pedigree of what happens when they meet historically in the playoffs.
It has nothing to do with intensity or any of that stuff. I think that game was pretty intense on the whole. I think it has to do with knowing the situation and then reacting accordingly. Neither team wanted to put themselves in a position to chase the tie in the second leg. I think they understood the calculus and they grasped the need for a tempered approach. And I think you saw that, and I think it was about what people expected between RSL and the Galaxy. Everyone knows those two teams now, and those two teams know each other very well. So I'm not entirely surprised to see how that unfolded.
Kyle, so with the game, obviously I don't think anyone expected it to go the way it did, not seeing a single goal with two highly potent offenses. We did see a great game from Pineda and Raimondo. Moving forward, who do you think breaks first, and who do you think is going to be able to score and just kind of separate themselves above the rest? Because there wasn't a lot in Rio Tinto.
Well, there's the question, right? And that's where RSL has the advantage now with that nil-nil draw. They haven't conceded at home. So if RSL is able to go out to stuff up center and get a goal at some point, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Galaxy to produce. And I do think the Galaxy will end up striking first. I think that they're a side that will be able to cope well at home. But RSL's in a pretty decent spot going forward.
You know, one of the things I was thinking about as I was watching all the games from this weekend is how in the West you saw two games that were largely solid defensive displays from all four teams, whereas in the East you didn't see as much great defensive work. In the long run and coming eventually to the MLS Cup, what do you think the importance of the defense in the West versus more of an attacking atmosphere in the East is going to play a role in who's going to possibly be lifting the cup this year?
It's an interesting contrast for sure. I think we'll have to sort of see how the postseason unfolds before we can make any rash determinations about that. I think it is a good observation, and it is something to monitor, because when you get to those one-off ties, particularly for an Eastern Conference team that's going to likely have to go on the road for MLS Cup, you're going to have to see how they cope with that type of situation.
Kyle McCarthy, Fox Soccer, joining us right now. Follow him on Twitter, @KyleJMcCarthy, if you're not already, and if you're not, what are you doing? When we look at the Eastern Conference now, because this is a perfect transition to start talking about New York, D.C., Columbus, and New England, I really was, we'll start with New York, impressed with the way that Henry was able to finish and shows a leadership that still exists in a very old professional's career that has done so much. When you first off look at the resiliency of New York, another team that showed well, 3 games in 8 days. What does it say about a leader like Thierry Henry, who's had a lot of speculation surrounding his playing time going forward in New York after this season?
It shows that he doesn't want to be done yet. And there's a lot of talk swirling around about his future right now, whether he'll return to New York, whether he'll go somewhere else, whether he'll step away from the game entirely. And his performances over the past few days suggest that he's relishing this opportunity and really wants to grab it with both hands. I thought he was excellent again on Sunday. I thought he got a lot of support from Peggy Louie and Dula in midfield, and I thought the Red Bulls were great value for their victory.
The wing plays was obviously a huge key into the Red Bulls win, but it took some time for Petke's boys to get into that rhythm. You know, like New England, if you could shut them down in the midfield, is New York very vulnerable on the outside that if they don't have that run of guys like Lloyd Sam, Peggy Lee and Doolittle, or even guys like Eric Alexander serving it to those guys on the outside, is New York a team that could be tamed?
Well, I think if you're looking at New York, you want to do a couple of things. You want to make sure that you're solid in the wide areas because they're going to send those fullbacks forward. And you want to counter quickly because when you look at how New York attacks, they're gonna throw some numbers into the other half, and I don't know if DC was able to break quickly enough to really punish them. But that being said, the Red Bulls now have a solid base in midfield, which they didn't have earlier this year. You get Dax McCarty and Eric Alexander playing behind William Dula, and they look much, much better in that department. And they're a real threat. They have played very well, and they are a team that looks organized enough to be a nuisance going forward.
How disappointed are you with DC?
I'm a little disappointed, but not entirely surprised.
Yeah,
I was intrigued to see them come out as flat as they did. They didn't offer a lot to the game on Sunday, but there's always been that nagging sense that the playoffs might prove one step too far for United, that they didn't have that game-changing presence to really carry them through. That being said, I don't think they're done yet. I think they'll put together a decent performance on home soil on Saturday and give the Red Bulls a run for their money.
Bill Hamid looked pretty impressive, I thought. What were your thoughts on his performance making? I mean, I thought for a while there Hamid could have kept DC in that game. Do you think he could be a game changer come, you know, Saturday night in terms of getting them through?
He's been a game changer for them for a lot of this season, and he certainly will need to be good at RFK Stadium because right now the United cannot afford to concede. Because they didn't score at Red Bull Arena. And if the Red Bulls can even score once, that's going to make the road back very, very complicated.
Moving over to New England now, finally, last but not least. You got a Revs team that was winning 4-1 in the 90th minute. You have Jose give up the handball, and they come back here with a 4-2 aggregate advantage. Were you expecting that scoreline when you turned on your TV around 5 o'clock Saturday afternoon?
No. I don't think anybody was expecting 4-2 Revolution. I'm not even sure the Revolution were expecting 4-2 to the Revolution. But I think it's a testament to how well they played on the day and what they were able to do against the Columbus team that did not defend particularly well at all.
No, I thought it was amazing that, because I was listening to MLS Extra Time during the middle of the week, and they were talking about how Tyson Wahl and Michael Parkhurst lined up better than AJ Soares and Jose Gonsalves. Why do you think there's a perception out there right now that New England center backs can't hold their own?
Well, I would disagree with that. I think they've been pretty good this year. I think AJ Soares has had a fantastic year for the Revs, and Jose Gonsalves has had some ups and downs, but it's been generally solid as well. And I do think that the crew had received good performances from that partnership of Parkhurst and Wahl during the closing stage of the season. And I think those two guys are good players, but it didn't work for them on Saturday. I thought the Reds were able to exploit some tentative defending, particularly from Wahl, and really reap the benefits.
You know, you remember the big moment in that game that really defines Columbus's scoring, Columbus's defense setup, really, is the Lee Wynn goal that makes it 3-1. And they're absorbing all that pressure and they're sitting back. We'll talk about Lee Wynn in a couple of minutes, but do you think that right there just shows that they just weren't well prepared enough to embrace that, you know, New England attack that has continued to not get better, but it has evolved week to week with now Jermaine Jones in the system?
I don't think it has a whole lot to do with preparation. I think it has more to do with the fact that they weren't willing to step up and risk getting beat one versus one. They just kept retreating and retreating and retreating. And at some point, you've got to step up and you've got to close down the ball and really force the Revs to make decisions. And they didn't do that on Saturday.
You know, mirroring one of your previous statements, I am also surprised at the result that ended up happening in Columbus. So my question is this. You have two probably of the hottest teams in the East, came head-to-head. New England came out on top. Are we now talking about New England for sure moving on to the next round and for sure moving on to the playoffs? Because I have this feeling that this team is looking so good that can New York or D.C. slow them down even?
Well, that's going to be a good question. I think you have to put first things first, second leg at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. There's still some work to do. Columbus can go through with a 3-0 result. The Crew are certainly going to need to score some goals on Sunday to get through. But, I mean, the Reds right now look like the most impressive team in the East. And that says a lot. But there's still a lot of work to do. And everything could change in an instant in the playoffs. I mean, one performance is not going to be enough to carry them to Orlovsko. They're going to have to be consistently good in order to reach that standard.
Well, that's exactly why we keep watching.
Is one performance in the playoffs enough to get Lee Winner Obafemi Martins an MVP?
MVP voting closed on Friday.
Well, yeah, that's true. Fair enough. Right.
So I think there will be people who will always think about it and wonder and all that sort of good stuff. But that ship has sailed a little bit at this point.
Completely right. That's my bad. That's bad job, Tommy. But when you look at the overall race and you see Lee Wynn and Obafemi Martins, do you think the overall winner was like, do you think Lee Wynn proved himself to be the overall MVP, whether he's voted it or not, after this weekend?
I think there's certainly a great case for Lee Wynn. I think he's been fantastic for the Reds this year. I think in terms of the real core assessment of the award as the most valuable player to his team, I think there's certainly an argument to be made there. And I think you also have to mention Robbie Keane from LA Galaxy, who has also been fantastic this year. I would be very surprised to see someone other than Keane, Wynn, or Martins take home that award.
In most circles, what are you hearing about where the MVP is going?
Well, it's sort of split along a lot of different ways at this point. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how those constituencies react to the situation. Because Bradley Wright Phillips also tied the single season goal scoring record. And MLS annals, that's generally the sort of production that will get you an MVP nomination. So you've really got four guys who are deserving of a spot in the last three, and it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds.
He's Kyle McCarthy of Fox Soccer. As always, great. Follow him on Twitter at Kyle J. McCarthy, as we mentioned earlier. Kyle, we will be talking to you again soon. Playoffs just starting up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Thanks again to Kyle McCarthy for coming on. Great, as always.
Danke schön, Kyle. Danke.
How do you think he would look with that full beard, by the way?
He'd look like Brian Shane.
It would take a while.
It'd be a much smaller version of Brian, Kyle. Kyle and Brian have two different looks to them. So,
what are you trying to say?
Nothing. I'm not trying to say anything. You bastard! You trying to make me look bad? Son of a bitch! Real quick on what Kyle had to say about the MVP race, because I found it interesting that he threw Bradley Wright Phillips' name in there. Do you think it really is this close? It really is. We've been talking it to death on this show. Like any other show would talk about an MVP race, but even the writers in the country are all separated on the fact that it's Keane, it's Lee, it's Obafemi Martins. It really is the best MVP race in recent history.
It really is, and it comes. It honestly, I can't personally separate it, but one of the things that I've been thinking about recently is the only way that it seems as if someone is going to get selected might just be a popularity contest. It might actually come down to the fact that one player is more liked than the other, because I think that you can easily...
I don't know if you could say that about Lee.
I think you can easily have this race come down to who is more liked and on very personal biases.
That's a cop-out.
It's not a cop-out. It's the only way that you can really determine. Can you honestly pick someone out of those four, unbiasedly, objectively, can you pick someone out of those four players?
If we're going to really weigh goals as a matter, then Bradley Wright Phillips.
It's not goals. Most valuable player is everything.
Bradley Wright Phillips.
Assists.
What would New York be without Bradley Wright Phillips, you could say? Would they even be in the playoffs right now without Bradley Wright Phillips?
Who knows?
And I think if you take, and like you said earlier, This man is capable of scoring 40-plus goals, and he only scored, what, 29 by the end of the regular season? 27.
If he scored 29, we'd be clapping about him breaking a record.
27, excuse me.
At least I'd be having some tequila shots. From our sponsors, Papagayos.
Papagayos. We look at a body of a work of a guy that changes the game in terms of offensive production, then yeah, I'm going to put Bradley Wright Phillips at the top, and then Lee wins second only on based on the pure fact that Bradley Wright Phillips has produced more. Now, who's been more effective in terms of bringing in wins for their teams? It's Lee Wynn, and that's obvious.
And who's had the most dangerous and deadly presence on the field? Obafemi Martins.
But at the same time, would Seattle be as good without Obafemi Martins?
I don't think so. I don't think they'd be anywhere. Who is going to be the partner that Dempsey so badly needed to get off the scoring mark?
Chad Barrett.
And like I'm trying to. Oh, yeah, Chad Barrett. Right.
Are you serious?
Sure. Like, take that hat off and walk outside into the cold for that statement. Honestly, like I said before.
Walk straight because you'll just drown in the ocean. Like Chad Barrett and Obafemi Martins, and I'm a Chad Barrett fan. They are in two different classes entirely. Like, just not even on the same level. So, I mean, like we said, yes, if Seattle is a totally different team without Obafemi Martins. I mean, you need him. You need his speed. You need his ability to put the ball into the back of the net. And you need his ability to get assists. That's the thing. So, I don't pick Bradley Wright Phillips because, yeah, he has 27 goals. He has, like, two assists, if that. And to be perfectly honest, New York would probably still be in the playoffs without him because he's still getting service from two of the best midfielders in the league with Henri and Lloyd Sam.
And Eric Alexander, too, is a good midfielder.
They're still going to get the wins. Bradley Wright Phillips, not an MVP for me. He's in contention. Yeah. He deserves votes, and they're going to be predominantly from the New York market, and that's fine. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. But historically, you have seen that when it comes to MVP votes, All-Star votes, it is a popularity contest, and that is going to negatively affect Lee Wynn.
And that's why I'm saying that when it comes down to it, the person who's getting MVP this year is going to be the most liked player across the media market. It's the person that everyone wants to see win it, and it's not necessarily going to be the person who I think is the best because, honestly, all three of them are MVP winners, in my mind. I would give all three of them the MVP, but we can't. So that's why I'm saying it's going to come down to biases and popularity, and that's it. That's how you select MVP this year.
All right. That's unfortunate, then, because it's such a good race.
It is. Yeah, it is. And do you know what? I really hope that the same thing happens next year.
Yeah, it'll only make the league better.
I would love it.
All right,
I would love it.
Let's wrap up the show before we go with our favorite segment of the week.
Woo! Favorite segments, accolades.
Team, player, coach, and moment of the week.
Okay.
Where do we start? Where do we start? Where do we start?
Looking around
the room. Where do we start? Which one do we start with? Oh. Team of the week, coach of the week.
You're asking like some serious questions that I'm not mentally.
Let's start with player of the week because I player of the week's right there. I'm going to go with Charlie Davies for player of the week this week.
What a surprise, Tom. Oh,
thanks.
No, it is a surprise. You usually pick someone from Man City.
It's true. Actually, it is.
So you don't want to pick Sergio Aguero.
Normally it's El Kun.
It is a cool Aguero.
Yaya Toure, maybe.
Yaya Toure sucks lately.
You do not talk ill about that man. I love him.
I'm going with Charlie. You know, he had two good goals this weekend. I mean, game-changing goals, and I think this is a very good sign for this man moving forward. So,
and for the first time in this segment's history, I agree with Tom.
Charlie
Davies, my player of the week.
That's why he's mad at me that I didn't pick anybody from Man City because I picked the same guy he did.
Yeah. Jesus.
It's usually me.
Brian and Tom agree? I feel weird. So along the similar selfish lines that I feel like you guys have gone with picking a player from your team, I'm going to pick Thierry Henry. Why? Because of that sicko back heel. Why? Because of that unbelievable ball over the top. Why? Because every single time he gets the ball throughout this whole season, the defender that is looking at him is almost pooping their pants, and you can see the brown stuff trickling down their leg every time he comes at them with pace.
That's foul.
Yeah, it is foul. And you know what's foul? How nasty he is on the field. That's my player of the week, Thierry Henry.
There we go. All right, Will, why don't you go with team of the week?
team of the week, I have to give it to Newcastle United, the Toonami. So, Newcastle are essentially 3-0-2 in the last five, beating great teams such as Liverpool and Tottenham. If you remember, Liverpool finished second last year. Tottenham also finished really well. The last time they were able to beat either one of these teams was in April and August of 2012. So let's say two seasons ago, Newcastle was 16th, and now it seems as if Alan Pardew has figured out to pull his Toonami up by the bootstraps and get them soldiering on to more victories. So I have to give it to Newcastle United and their revival.
God, I love that British accent.
Just real quick, for a reminder, who was it that Newcastle beat last week in the Capital One Cup? I'm drawing a blank. It was some team that wore blue.
Thanks, douchebag.
Some kind of like baby blue, almost like a girl blue.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, almost like a girl blue. I remember because the team is full of wankers, owned by a society of wankers that wear turbans, essentially. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember the name.
My team of the week is, it was Man City. My team of the week is Southampton, and it's simply because Ronald Koeman's boys has only lost one game in the Premier League since August 23rd. I mean, this team is, they look good right now. They don't look like they're going to slow down. They have Leicester City and then Villa next on their schedule. Their first real tough game, stretch cool of games, comes against, Villa. Well, this is when it gets tough for Southampton. It comes at the end of the month. They go Man City November 30th. Wednesday, quick turnaround midweek game against Arsenal. Then 5 days later against Manchester United. So, I mean, it'll be definitely tough towards the end of the month and the beginning of December, but Ronald Koeman's men, probably the best behind Jose Mourinho's right now in the Barclays.
I think we need to start a charity campaign for Brad Guzan, because you mentioned Tottenham, and Tottenham came from behind to beat Aston Villa. We should start a charity
Benteke.
We should start a charity event for Brad Guzan to get him on a better team where he actually deserves. So if you want to see Brad Guzan succeed, and if you want to see him for the U.S. national team, call this number, 203-555-555, and you can donate a couple cents a day to start a campaign to get him moving on to a better and higher prospects. Thank you very much, and we love you, Brad Guzan.
This has been a public service announcement by the Pitch Invaders podcast.
For those paying attention, you were one digit short on that.
I know. I'm not giving out my full number.
Well, you could have just gone an extra five.
That's
but
true.
Anyway, so we're on
Team of the Week.
So I gave, you gave Newcastle, I gave Southampton.
My team of the week is your New England Revolution.
Wah, wah, wah.
Who were able to take a monkey off of their back and put the ball into the net four times.
Four times.
Especially on the road. Best road win of the year.
How many times must I score? 1, 2, 3, 4. The count was in Columbus, and he was wearing a Revs jersey.
Coach of the week, Brian.
Will needs to go first because mine piggybacks off his.
All right, I'm going to have to go with Louis Van Gaal. I want to say that after 10 games, I have to give him unbelievable props for doing this amazing record. So in 10 games, he has accumulated 13 points. He's scored 16 goals, conceded 14, an average possession of 55.8%, an average passing percentage of 85.5%, 11.2 average position of the opponents, 4.7 shots per game, 11.6% conversion rate, and he did all of this only by spending 241 million euros, and that is why he is my coach of the week.
And my coach of the week is David Moyes.
Why?
Because this is what he did over a 10 games.
10-game span.
So, in 10 games, David Moyes had 17, which is 4 more points, 1 more goal scored, 1 goal less conceded, average possession, a little bit better, not much, nothing really. Passing accuracy stayed the same, average position of opponents, higher or lower, rather. Shots per game higher, conversion rate higher. And he did all this with $27 million, which is a $214 million difference. So by David Moyes not coaching Manchester United, he actually did better than
Louis Van Gaal.
That might have to be our bombshell moment of the week.
Boom!
Bam.
That was 27 million euros, not dollars.
Yeah, 27 million euros.
Euros. We're talking in that funny paper money that they do in Europe.
Okay, and...
I should have used Deutschmarks.
Coach of the week, Alan Pardew.
Why Alan Pardew? Oh, is it because of what I said before?
It is because of what you said before. The fact that this man... Actually, no. It'll be two guys. Alan Pardew and Sam Allardyce. Because I thought the way that game finished the other day on the road for West Ham, for them to pull a 2-2 draw at the Britannia against what is a fairly decent Mark Hughes team, I think West Ham and Newcastle are going to be two teams that stay in the top 10 this year. I think it's going to happen. And I think
Newcastle is staying in the top 10.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Lay off the pipe, seriously.
Nick Ironside, I got you, bro.
For cereal.
Okay, on that bombshell, I guess, let's move on to Moment of the Week. My Moment of the Week
was
Celtic TV in the area of Scotland and Ireland, as we know, the original place of Halloween. That's where the birth of Halloween was. Celtic TV hosted a pumpkin carving competition between footballers Charlie Mulgrew, Chris Commons, and a TV cameraman that works there. The pumpkins were terrible, but it was hilarious to watch these footballers stab knives into pumpkins for 3 minutes and come up with probably the most mediocre-looking carved pumpkins I've ever seen. It was beautiful, and I encourage everyone to watch it. It was hilarious.
Brian?
My moment of the week come from...
Moments.
Come from...
Plural.
The first one, it comes from the Israel Premier League, which I can only imagine this is the first time we have ever talked about the Israeli Premier League.
Wow, you're right. Tel Aviv.
There's a nice derby down there between the Tel Aviv teams, Morecambe and another one that I don't know how to pronounce. they're a little bit of an issue with some pitch invaders. A pitch invasion gone wrong, if
Uh-oh.
You will.
Hashtag that.
Players came out, started to attack players. A couple punches were thrown. The game was broken up and stopped playing. And then my other moment of the week will go to Spain, which is the first time I've ever picked Spain. So this is a first for me because I'm not a La Liga fan.
You're full of a lot of firsts today,
this
Brian.
Is a first. Agreeing with Tom, talking about the Israeli Premier League, and now picking a moment from a Real Madrid game where there was a pitch invasion gone right.
Yes.
So we have a pitch invasion gone wrong.
And a pitch invasion gone right.
And a pitch invasion gone right.
The pitch invasion gone right occurred when a young lad ran on the field and hugged who I can only imagine is childhood icon Cristiano Ronaldo, and he just wouldn't let go. It was adorable. I mean,
we tweeted
both these stories out. I think the video from Tel Aviv got kind of
choppy.
I kind of think the internet kind of got in the way. It's not there anymore.
So,
you know, shenanigans. So check both those out if you can. One's adorable. One is
hilarious. It's like a little fat kid just holding on for dear life.
Yeah, it's adorable. And then,
mommy, don't take my cookies.
Yeah, obviously here at the Pitch Invasion or the Pitch Invaders podcast, rather, we only condone one of these, and that is hugging Cristiano Ronaldo and not letting go.
I vehemently condone it. But anyways, push comes to shove. Tom Quinlan.
My final moment of the week was something Will and I, again, talked about off the air. And again, Will directed me into this beautiful direction. Here's a story of actual full kit wankers. This comes from 101greatgoals.com. Rutherford Raiders, a uni team, university, from Kent, England, were having no joy finding a sponsor. So they decided to put the logo of their favorite porn site, Pornhub.com, on their shirts for a laugh. The people of Pornhub caught wind of the stunt and offered to sponsor the team for real, but the coup has been blocked by the university. A spokesperson from University of Kent said, "The University of Kent sports department would never sanction sponsorship of this type. It is totally inappropriate. The team has been spoken with and will not be allowed to wear the shirts in question at any time. We will take the issue very seriously, and inter-college sports teams, which are the responsibility of Kent Sport, must present any potential sponsorship and or logos for approval." Oh, come on.
Wow, that's amazing. Pornhub sponsoring a team. I can only imagine the type of cheerleaders they would want to have afterwards, going down the Crystal Palace route, of course.
For what it's worth.
Oh, absolutely the Crystal Palace route.
For what it's worth, yeah. The jersey was actually pretty solid.
It was. It was a solid jersey.
The
black and white is simple. The Pornhub kind of stood out. It looked pretty good. It, like, we might call it a full kit wanker, but it was full kit beauty in my mind. There's something beautiful about that. A well-constructed jersey. But brought to you by England.
But if Pornhub is throwing out sponsorships, I just want them to know that they can contact us at the Podcast Invaders.
Yeah, they can.
They can be our new sponsor.
I have no reservations with taking one of those large stickers and maybe making the entire back of my Mac computer just a big Pornhub sticker. I might get some looks in public, but I'm just going to very quickly lean over and be like, "Don't worry, m'lady, it's just a sponsor." Wink. And then walk away.
Okay. Thanks to Kyle McCarthy, because I can't find anything else to transition out of Pornhub.
There's nothing you can do.
Special guest set up for Thursday. We have something planned for you, so just make sure you're tuned into Thursday's podcast.
Don't leave us in suspense, yeah. Tom.
No, I have to. Follow Willie Football. Follow at @Brian_Spreaks.
Listen to what we have to say.
Just a history lesson. Last time Tom promised a really, really impressive guest. It didn't happen.
It's true.
But still,
it's
listen
true.
Anyways.
He broke our hearts. But you know what won't break your hearts? When Josie Altidore, Mix Descarude, and Breck Shea all find new teams. Woo!
And what won't break your heart is if you listen anyways, we can still run this shit without other people.
Uh-huh.
Hey, he said shit.
Yeah. We B-O-S-S balls, balls. B-O-S-S balls. What? B-O-S-S balls.
Out of here. Bye.
This has been another edition of the Pitch Invaders podcast. Be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Podcast Invaders and check out other shows as well, including New England Soccer Weekly and the New England Revolution Post-Match Report, all on 1510 WUFC.
Will, did you get your copy of Love Life Soccer? This is anonymous.
Yeah, I did. Oh, I got it. I can't believe we just talked that much about porn. About the Pornhub. That's kind of embarrassing. Gotta be the hottest sunshine like chrome. Gotta find that song. It's a mind of its own. Love roller coaster loop around in the zone.